notion of civil disobedience, of striking a blow against Big Brother, has renewed the rebellious youth in me.
Catapult the propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
The highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody. And welcome to our lovely Sunday evening right here smack dab in the middle of America, the navel, so to speak.
Yes, although we're not home of any sort of naval base.
No, but fuzzy naval.
Yeah.
It's because we have lousy hygiene.
Smack in the middle. Although, it was interesting to learn recently, after moving here to Columbia, one of the local facts that we learned about mid-Missouri is that the third most dangerous waterway in the United States is right here in mid-Missouri. And that would be the Lake of the Ozarks.
Oh!
It's more dangerous
per capita. That's with the creek running behind the apartments.
Yeah. Well, that could be, too.
Yeah, that could be.
In terms of number of accidents, boating accidents over the last couple of years, it's more dangerous than the Pacific Ocean.
Now, I think we can come up with possible reasons for this, and one of them I would say is that not too far north of the Lake of the Ozarks is Columbia, Missouri, which is College Town, USA. That is its nickname. There are more colleges per capita here than you can shake a stick at.
That's true. In fact, you shake a stick, you're likely to hit a college kid in this town, wherever
you
are.
I can't walk outside without hitting a college student.
That's true. No, actually, I think Lake of the Ozarks has its problem for two reasons. Number one, it's a narrow body of water, so it gets choppy when you get some of the bigger boats going through the channels. But number two is that, unlike the Pacific Ocean, every place you can put in a boat, there happens to be a bar, a tavern.
Well, that's my point.
Yeah.
It's that there is that, but I think that on the weekends, you're going to have an awful lot of cars pointing south.
Yeah, exactly. And in the summertime, especially around 4th of July weekend. So, yeah, that was a little bit of a surprise, finding out that here in mid-Missouri, where we're miles and miles, I mean many miles away from a huge body of water, we've got the one of the most dangerous bodies of water in the United States.
I think also that there could be a physics reason. We should probably have those listeners out there who do have degrees in physics give us a little email advice here, because being the center of the United States, there may be some sort of an effect with gravitation.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course there was that black hole experiment in St. Louis. Oh, wait, that was just a sci-fi movie. Sorry, I'm confusing it with reality again.
No, I think it really took place. I think it did. You know what? Not far from here, we're going to have something coming up if it doesn't get voted out.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's start in on that. As long as there's a local tie there, and it certainly is conspiracy oriented, we are peering into darkness.
That's what PID stands for, just in case you don't know.
That's right. If you're new to the program, and we do thank you for sliding us into your iPod, there is a proposal that has been requested by the Department of Homeland Security from a number of organizations around the country. Most of them are schools, colleges, academic institutions, to construct a biohazard level 3 and 4 facility to study diseases and substances that could be used in a what they call bio or agro terror attack.
Now, lest you think, why in the middle of Missouri? Well, first of all, the more distance you can get between a facility and, you know, a dense population, the better off you are. That's why Plum Island is an island. But also, the University of Missouri is one of the few places, few colleges here in the United States that has a vet school and a medical school, both at the same campus.
Right. And so when the Department of Homeland Security began to solicit proposals for what they're calling the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility, or NBAF, when they solicited proposals for NBAF back in the spring, Missouri was one of about 30 consortiums that submitted proposals.
You want to be
really particular. So, and they've made the first cut. So we could wind up with a facility here in Columbia devoted to studying West Nile virus, foot and mouth disease, anthrax, and other potentially devastating diseases We're talking about a facility here that will probably cost in the neighborhood of $500 million to construct.
You know the nice thing, though, seriously, because we're only a few hours away from Kansas City, is we're not that far from a Mexican,
maybe an inland port. What?
Yes, an inland port. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a minute here, too. That's really interesting.
No, but seriously. I mean, if the Trans-American Corridor is going to go, it's not that far from, you know, the navel of America being
That's
Columbia.
Right.
So who knows?
Well, they call it the Kansas City Smart Port, and that will be part of this road that they're planning to develop.
We are starting to see a pattern. We've got at least one, if not two, North and South corridors planned.
Yeah, there are a number out there. And Jerome Corsi, who's been doing yeoman's work in researching this and trying to get the word out, look for his archived articles at Human Events Online and also WorldNet Daily, where he has really exposed the back-channel methods that the Bush administration is using to try to merge the United States, Canada, and Mexico into one entity.
Exactly. But if you look at not just that, but also take a look at the same company is buying up the toll roads that go east and west.
Well, yeah. The there's a Spanish construction firm called Cintra, which purchased from the state of Indiana the right to operate the Indiana Toll Road last year. Which cost them $3.8 billion and gives them a 99-year lease to operate the toll road and to profit from it, of course. They're not doing this as a public service. They also have a contract now with the city of Chicago to operate the Chicago Skyway, which connects to the Indiana toll road. They've plunked down about $6 billion to the state of Texas now to construct the first stretch of what they call the Trans-Texas Corridor. This Trans-Texas Corridor is a... actually, they paid the state of Texas $1.2 billion. It's going to cost $6 billion to build. What they're talking about is about a 1,200-foot-wide corridor, which would contain two high-speed traffic lanes for trucks, three for cars, and possibly also high-speed rail and high-speed freight lines for shipping trains up from Mexico. Now, they've only got approval from the state of Texas to do this so far. And they say that, well, this is just so that you can run from San Antonio to Dallas without having to go through Austin on I-35, which slows you down. That's all. This is just to let people go from San Antonio to Dallas much more quickly. Bullpucky. This is designed to go all the way to the state line at Oklahoma, and you can bet that they're not going to let it end at Oklahoma.
Exactly. Why have it stop there?
Right.
That makes no sense.
Well, we found an article, actually it was forwarded to us, from the International Construction Review, which lays it out. This is planned as part of a highway that will go all the way to Duluth, Minnesota, and then connect to Canadian highways, which will then take these containers.
And this same company owns some toll roads up there in Canada.
Owns toll roads in Canada. This Spanish firm, Cintra, C-I-N-T-R-A, is apparently investing in public infrastructure, and they plan to run this, what they're calling a NAFTA superhighway from San Antonio, Laredo, actually, which is the border crossing, from Laredo, Texas, to Duluth, Minnesota. And there will be, as Sharon mentioned, that smart port in Kansas City. So in other words, container vessels will offload at ports in Mexico. These container vessels coming from China or Singapore, loaded with goods from China probably, will offload in Mexico, where, by the way, the vessels are not worked by longshoremen or the Longshoremen's Union, cheaper labor, loaded onto trains or Mexican trucks, which don't operate under the same EPA guidelines as American trucks, run up to the border at Laredo, and then on this superhighway, this Trans-Texas Corridor, which will run basically the first port stop that they'll have. I mean, they'll be waved across the border with just an RFID screen. Because the containers will have been pre-screened in China by trusted trading partners. Okay, remember that phrase, trusted trading partners. They'll be waved across the border and then offloaded at the Kansas City Smart Port for distribution east and west along Interstate 70, which, of course, comes right through Columbia here. Yes?
Yes, yes. I've raised my hand
raised
for those
hand.
Who can't see.
Yes, Mrs.
Barber. Suddenly had a funny thought, and I just did a little looking, and this is preliminary. I haven't backed this up, but I have found one site that lists this person says the owner of Cintra is King Juan Carlos.
Who is a member of the Bilderbergers. Yes.
He's like one of the head Bilderbergers.
Yeah. Yeah. There are basically two royals, European royals, that attend every single Bilderberg meeting. One is Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, and the other is King Juan Carlos.
You know, there are some who say King Juan Carlos is the top.
That's very interesting. Because he's very low key.
Very low key, but you know,
when I don't even know what he looks like.
When we went into Iraq, it was just Poland, United States,
Spain, and the UK.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, one last note on this Trans-Texas Corridor. Bear in mind that the recent U.S. Supreme Court rulings on eminent domain, what was it, Kelo, the Kelo decision
seemed to come out of nowhere.
As long as we're doing it for public use, we can take your property away and give it to a private developer. Apparently, according to this article in International Construction Review, the developers, which is not only the Spanish from Sintra, but a San Antonio-based company, H.B. Zachary, the developers will exercise or intend to exercise the principle of eminent domain on the grounds that they are acting as agents of a public authority, even though they're developing this road to operate as a private toll road, because it will be used by the public and generate public revenues, supposedly, facilitating trade, et cetera, et cetera. They believe that they can use eminent domain to take property away, and it's not going to stop at the Texas-Oklahoma border. It's going to continue all the way through and across the United States.
Oh, you better believe it is. And as I said a few minutes ago, it isn't just north and south.
Right.
Sintra owns east-west.
That's right. The Indiana Toll Road,
These turnpikes, and they're called that because of the construction of the arm that comes down. It looks like an old pike, you know, that the soldiers would carry. And they were created as toll roads because that was supposed to pay for the road.
Right.
Well, the roads have been paid for a long time, one would think.
Yeah. Well, in Missouri, I think something we need to watch for, because Interstate 70 would be the main east-west corridor branching out from Kansas
City.
It is
not a toll road.
It is not a toll road, but there have been some rumblings that I've caught in the press in Missouri over the last couple of weeks over, how are we going to pay for road and infrastructure improvements? And I would be surprised if we don't see somebody come out and say, you know, in fact, this is what I was trying to remember. There was a suggestion floated to finance new bridge construction across the Mississippi River at St. Louis, that Illinois and Missouri, rather than trying to pool their resources and build it with state funds, look for private investors to build the next major bridge across. Because right now, the bridges that cross the Mississippi at St. Louis, with the exception of the one on the south side of the metro, the Jefferson Barracks Bridge, the one right downtown, that Poplar Street Bridge, which carries Interstate 64, Interstate traffic from 44,
and 55,
and 70, all right there. It merges at this one bridge. It is constantly under construction and repair. Constantly. So there have been talks about, you know, let's put a new bridge with more capacity across the river, but how do we fund it? I'll bet we'll start seeing some talk about private construction.
And I know that those conversations include numbers like $8 to cross the bridge.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I'd like to know is how a 1,200-foot wide, a quarter-mile wide corridor for travel back and forth is going to affect the movement of people and goods east and west across the United States.
Well, you're going to have either ramps that go off or, I don't know, feeder stations or something.
Right. I mean, if you've got farm on one side and, you know, the rest of your community is on the other side of the road, how far are you going to have to go around? I mean, I'm sure this is a problem they had to deal with when the interstate system was constructed, but you don't have any interstates out there that are a quarter of a mile wide. Think of the bridge that you need to run across a 1,200-foot corridor as opposed to your current interstate highway system.
Okay, if you were a person inclined to wear a tinfoil hat.
Which I am.
Well, and that's why I love you, one of the reasons. And you're looking, you know, in your mind, picturing the United States and, of course, the wonderful naval here in Columbia. The United States of America with divided almost in half. It's more like 60-40. But divided down the middle, essentially, with the Mississippi River. Boy, hope something never happens to that river.
Hmm.
If for some reason we couldn't bring flatboats up that river, well, what would you do? A wonderful north and south corridor would help things, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, that was a question we almost had to answer last year when the port of New Orleans took it.
And you have to look at that again, because if New Orleans takes another hit, or if there's a super hurricane that somehow hits the mouth of the Mississippi, what are you going to do? Or if the New Madrid goes off.
If the New Madrid goes off, that would really disrupt barge traffic down the river for a long time.
Exactly. So how are you going to move a little? Because a lot of goods do go up and down the rivers.
Yeah.
We may forget about that, those people who don't live on the river. But I grew up on a river town, and I saw barge traffic all day long, up and down.
Right.
And the Mississippi is the same way.
Well, it is interesting to ponder, and this might have something to do with providing an alternate travel route. But again, tinfoil hat in place, it seems to me more likely that it's designed to bring Chinese goods in at a port in Mexico where they can be offloaded cheaper, run on Mexican trucks cheaper.
Oh, I totally agree with that.
But you're right. This is how it'll be sold.
At it as another, exactly.
That's how it'll be sold to the public.
Exactly.
We need an alternative.
We need an alternative northwest. Right. I'm sorry, north-south route.
Mm-hmm. And forget the fact that it's being built by private investors as a privately operated for-profit toll road, a quarter mile wide, dividing the country in half, like the Berlin Wall of North America. Speaking of super hurricane, now Ernesto may not live up to that, but we're keeping an eye on Ernesto as he kind of meanders toward the Gulf of Mexico.
He was looking for a good place to land. He's taking a look, and right now, as you say, he's looking at Cuba.
Accepting offers, considering his options.
Well, he's stopping to say hi. You know, he does have a Spanish name, so he's going to stop and say hi in Cuba. Probably stop along the way and now decide, do I want to go over to Florida? Do I want to head over toward Texas?
Yucatan. Could be anywhere.
It really could be. We went to AccuWeather.com and looked at their path estimations, and it is all over the map, literally. All over the map.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen. We're praying nothing. The other thing that's been in the news this weekend, a couple of things. One is very good, and that's that Steve Santani and Olaf Wiig were released.
Thank God for that.
Thank God for that.
Boy,
you know, Fox
that was
News
so
was very
weird.
Low-key, extremely low-key. In fact, they did not mention it for 2 days. And I began to really get kind of upset about that, because it seemed to me like that would have been something that they would have wanted, their listeners, because we all knew it.
I mean,
their viewers. We all knew it had happened, so why weren't we getting information?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know this for sure, but I started looking at it from a political standpoint. Do you want to give press to a group that wants recognition?
That was the
main reason for taking somebody who is a journalist, is you're going to automatically get that. And Fox News is heard all over the world, seen all over the world. So.
Yeah.
But they were released today. Praise God.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. You're right. If we report the story, then the group that we basically empower and play right into the hands of the guys who took them.
Yeah, of course, the other story that we all heard this morning was the story of the Com Air jet.
In Kentucky,
We're finding out now that they apparently took the wrong runway, a runway that was too short.
Yep. And because they ran out of room before they could get airborne, they wound up in a field. And was it just one survivor that crashed?
As of this morning, there was one survivor out of 50. On board, 47 passengers, 3 crew.
That's really tragic. And our prayers to the friends and family of those who were involved in that crash. It sounds cliched, but it's true. We don't know when we get up any morning how much more time we've got left. And what may appear to just be a routine day may, in fact, be the last chance you have to make peace with the Lord. And if you've listened to our program for any length of time, you know what we mean by that.
Exactly. Well, there's a commercial right now, a series of commercials that I think are really, they're selling airbags or a car.
It's a Volkswagen, I think.
Yeah, whatever the car is. It really isn't successful because I can't remember the car. Just know it's a car. But I think the message that they're sending is that in the blink of an eye, it's over.
Right.
Because people in these cars, of course, are having very, almost nonsensical conversations.
Mundane, right.
Very mundane. And suddenly in the middle of it,
a truck broadsides the car.
Something smacks them. Yeah. Right. Just out of nowhere. And it's so shocking to watch.
Yeah.
But that's how it happens. I've been in a number of auto accidents. I've been hit by a number of people over the years, and it does happen very fast.
Yeah. So just something to bear in mind. A lot of other things going on. Let's get conspiratorial, continue in the conspiratorial bent. This was something that Sharon found and posted in Watcher magazine earlier this week. It's not getting any play in the American press. This is a story from, well, it's got tentacles reaching into Italy and Greece. And it relates to the warrantless wiretap program of the NSA. Two whistleblowers, one in Italy, one in Greece, who reported secret bugging systems installed in cell phones around the world have met with untimely ends. In July, an Italian telecommunications security expert named Adamo Bove, I'm going to say B-O-V-E, mm-hmm. Bove, either leapt or was pushed from a freeway overpass. He had no history of depression and left no note. Last March of 2005, a Greek telecommunications expert named Kostas Tsalakidis met with a similar end. Both of them had reported American attempts to listen in on government officials, anti-war activists, and private businessmen. Now, Bove was already on somebody's list because he was the guy who tracked cell phone calls and discovered the CIA kidnapping of Muslim cleric Abu Omar, who was flown to Egypt and tortured. And the government of Italy is trying to file suit against the CIA personnel involved in that case. And Bove was the guy who tracked their cell phones and identified more than 24 American agents. However, he also revealed that his employer, Telecom Italia, had allowed illegal spyware or undetectable wiretaps to be installed in Italy's largest telecommunications system. Now, in Greece, Tsalakidis, who is an engineer for Vodafone, which is like Sprint, had discovered a sophisticated piece of spyware inside the Vodafone network there, targeting the prime minister of Greece and other top government officials, along with military officers, anti-war activists, and a number of business officials. That was so sensitive that when Tsalakidis reported to the prime minister asked him to keep it out of his report. And again, Tsalakidis and Bove, who discovered these apparently American attempts to spy on Italy's and Greece's government, are now dead. So,
weren't they both ruled suicides?
Both were ruled suicides, but neither had a history of depression. Neither left suicide notes.
Mm-hmm.
And both, we're connecting dots here, and this is circumstantial evidence to be sure. But both of them had discovered attempts, sophisticated attempts, to tie into the largest telecommunications networks in those countries, and routed communications. It's in the Greek case, the system at Vodafone was transmitting in real time to four antennae located near the United States Embassy. So
that's really interesting.
It is really interesting.
Well, you know, since you have brought up AT&T, you and I were talking yesterday about the fact that AT&T is sort of snapping up all of these different carriers.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting back to the days of Ma Bell.
Right.
Or very much like Ma Bell, when it was essentially one communications network, and that was it. You had no competition. Of course, it was broken up because of the antitrust suit that was brought against it, and the fact that it was a no competition company, and they could charge whatever they wanted to. So we got all these little baby bells, and of course, they're all now rejoining like some glob. Yesterday, our internet access went down. Which panics us because we're on there all the time. And we felt like we were going into withdrawal, but it was out for probably, 8-9 hours. And during that time, Derek called in to find out because we tried everything we could, thinking it was something here. Well, you were told that, was it Nortel?
Nortel.
Nortel had gone down in central Missouri.
Right, covering all of Jefferson City and Columbia. All of the internet service providers in mid-Missouri that relied on Nortel's backbone.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the connection to the internet itself.
Right.
We're offline.
Okay, now imagine one company controlling all of it.
Mm-hmm. And what was really interesting was that the gentleman I spoke to at our ISP said that last weekend on one of the coolest weekends that we've had all summer long, it's been mm-hmm. a very hot summer here in the Midwestern United States, a part apparently overheated, which took Nortel's network covering Southern Illinois
mm-hmm.
offline.
And exactly.
All of Southern Illinois from basically Springfield South was offline.
So suddenly Derek and I looked at each other and said,
gee,
is there a test going on?
Doesn't it make you wonder, though? I mean, because we're not talking about the internet service providers, the people that actually route the connection to your home. We're talking about the people that the ISPs connect to in order to tap right. into the World Wide Web itself.
The actual infrastructure.
Yeah. Nortel is the provider, and apparently its networks carry something like 70% of America's internet traffic. So if one weekend, let's remember back now. I was thinking of the Oliver Stone movie, JFK.
Yes.
In which Donald Sutherland's character relates to Kevin Costner's character, of course, playing Jim Garrison, the mm-hmm. New Orleans DA. The fact that the telephones in Washington, D.C. suddenly went offline, went down for an hour at about the time that JFK was shot in Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it occurred to us, gee, what if something similar were happening or were to happen in the event of a national emergency here? Mm-hmm. How effectively could they control the release of news by shutting off
exactly.
internet access?
Well, think of it from our viewpoint. When we go into a combat situation, what's one of the first things you have to do? Two things. You have to take out the communications and
right.
take out the infrastructure. So
command
you
and control.
Can't, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So if somebody wanted to do us harm here in Missouri or out west or out east or in the south or wherever,
mm-hmm.
the first thing you have to do is cut communications. And the interesting thing about the internet communications is, you know, you and I were sitting there. We had Daniel Boone on or something on the internet, on television. And, of course, the television, the cable, was fine.
Worked fine,
because
right.
that's not, you know, different backbone. But our internet went down, and that's where we would go.
For the news.
For the news.
Right.
Because that's where you can access the world.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have it filtered through one little tiny funnel
right.
locally.
Or one national funnel called Fox News or CNN
exactly.
or MSNBC.
Exactly.
Right. With the internet, you can access, you know, Xinhua. You can access mm-hmm. all sorts of foreign news sources that don't go through the same pipeline. But if you connect and just cut off the backbone, the internet backbone, in mm-hmm. one or two spots. And let's face it, the internet was developed by DARPA, the United States military.
Mm-hmm.
I would be willing to bet that there are doors built into the internet just for that purpose.
Oh, I'm convinced of it. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah.
So if any of you listening here in the United States, but you know elsewhere in the world as well, if you have experienced something similar in the last few weeks, let us know. Has local infrastructure suddenly gone down?
Mm-hmm.
In your area.
Yep. Very, very interesting. And again, Sharon mentioned AT&T and how this connects to the story about the guy in Italy and the guy in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
The stories have come out here in the U.S. over the last 6 months, which did not seem to raise much in the way of protest from the American public of AT&T's willingness to cooperate with the NSA.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story that came out about 2 months ago, just before we left St. Louis, of the office in Bridgeton there, where there was a secret room at AT&T's office in Bridgeton where only certain guys were allowed in, and the people who worked there suspected they had government connections. And it was not just a room for telecommunications. It was also the room through which the internet connections were routed. So it's very, very possible, I would say probable, that similar connections, taps,
mm-hmm.
are online here in the United States. If we're doing it in Greece and in Italy, it's probably happening here in the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the movement of data back and forth, Wayne Madsen at Wayne Madsen Report has reported on another internet, or well, I should say electronic data theft, almost 29,000 from William Beaumont Hospital in Detroit. This is in addition to $29,000 from Chevron, $160,000 from Kaiser Permanente, $38,000 from the Department of Veteran Affairs, all in the month of August. All of these involving physical thefts of hard drives or laptop computers, data containing social security numbers, dates of birth, financial data. And then, of course, there was the one that we talked about a few weeks ago, the Department of Transportation data theft, 130,000 identifications, including pilots, airline pilots. Mm-hmm. And with those social security numbers, you could easily fake the ID of an airline pilot for nefarious purposes. Not making big news, but we're, since spring, if you go back and look at Wayne Madsen's report, he's got a chart showing all of the data thefts that he's documented from mainstream news sources since spring, and it's into the millions, the tens of millions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would say way, yeah. Speaking of government, for those of you who have a loved one or a friend or you yourself receive payments from Social Security or Medicare, if you got an extra check this week, don't cash it.
Mm-hmm.
Because apparently the computers between Social Security and Medicare got together and somehow cooked up, invented a letter. That's what the story is, that somehow the two computers didn't interface correctly and they issued checks, refund checks for pharmaceutical payments for prescription drugs to seniors in the amount of about $115. $215, I think. That was the average check amount. And the problem is that you have to pay it back. If you cash that check, you have to pay it back. If you didn't cash the check, then hang on to it because they don't intend to honor it. The government is saying that they accidentally sent the checks out. My mom may have been one of those recipients. First thing I did was call my sister, who takes care of Mom's legal business, and ask her if she could please check on it, because Mom gets it automatically deposited.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, if you have the automatic deposit, then it went automatically to your bank.
So they're going to take it back out?
Exactly.
Oh, man. What I don't understand is how the government computers could fabricate a letter
exactly
to go along with it.
Because according to all the stories that I read and heard, that program, that idea of refunding prescription drug payments, because it's this Part D program, and that's the prescription drug benefit. Part D is something that they have to pay extra for, a little extra for each month. And the letter said, we're refunding everything you paid for Part D this year, and you don't have to pay anything on it ever again. So not only did these seniors receive extra checks, they also were told, hey, from now on, you don't have to pay a dime for this. I think this was really mean.
Well, yeah. And again,
I think
it sounds,
should get to keep the money.
I agree. It sounns to me like something really went, because somebody had to draft the letter. I mean,
I know,
it's not something that the computer would just generate all by itself.
But that's the story.
Yeah. Well,
we're sticking to it, too.
I don't buy it. Let's talk a little geopolitics. Interesting fallout from the little escapade in Lebanon over in Israel. A poll published this past week in the Yedioth Ahronoth, I shouldn't have even tried.
Ynet, what are you trying to pronounce?
It's Ynet News. Yeah, Ynet News.
That's what I was calling
Yeah,
Ynet.
Which is in Jerusalem, said that a poll of Israeli voters feel that about two-thirds of them believe Ehud Olmert, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, should resign because he failed in his management of the war in Lebanon. Only 29% believe that he's fit to continue leading the country.
Well, if he resigned, that would put Shimon Peres in.
Yeah, that would.
Oh, he hates being prime minister.
Now, isn't that interesting, though? You may remember, if you've looked in the PID radio archives, we had a brief conversation with Barry Chamish some time back, and he believes that Shimon Peres has been the power behind the scenes in Israel for many, many years.
And he, at the time, said that he was getting ready to get out of Dodge. He was taking his family and leaving Israel, and he has since moved to Canada.
Yes.
And he said it because he had learned, and he wasn't specific with us at the time, when Israel went into Lebanon, I thought, oh, that's what Barry was talking about. He believed that his son was going to be called up very soon if he didn't get him out of there.
Well, it was that and also the fact that the IDF was being used to physically and forcibly remove settlers from settlements in the West Bank and in Gaza.
Which would be very difficult to do.
He did not want his children to be involved in physical confrontations with other Israeli citizens.
Exactly. But I think it would also be very difficult to be a pilot and to be told that your job today is to fly over this area and bomb everywhere we tell you. Now, mind you, we're telling you only targets that contain, you know, the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
There are no citizens, no innocent
civilians living there. Yeah,
in these buildings. Well, you don't know that.
You don't know that.
No, you don't. And it would be hard. I would find it very difficult to do that.
Right. So people are protesting the way the Olmert government handled the war. A group of protesters who were demonstrating chose to do it at the gravesite of the former prime minister, Golda Meir, mm-hmm. who resigned after the war in 1973 because she allowed Egypt and Syria to get the drop on the IDF, which right. caused massive casualties.
Message being Golda Meir knew when to get out.
Right. So
get
do the honorable
out,
thing. Yeah. Which, as Barry Chamis suggested, leaves Shimon Peres as the man in charge mm-hmm. again.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that all
and
plays out.
And none of
out.
This would have happened had Ariel Sharon not gone into the hospital.
That's true.
That's why Olmert went in the first place.
Right. And Chamis has suggested, no, he's flat out accused Peres of somehow being involved in the fact that Sharon suddenly took ill.
Well, we don't know if that's true or not, but you have to wonder because it seems mm-hmm. awfully convenient.
Awfully convenient. We could go into, you know, more geopolitics there. But
speaking of politics, there's a story on Watcher Magazine from yesterday that I really found interesting. It's an opinion piece. Well, for all intents and purposes, it's an opinion piece. But it's called the Cheney Presidency.
Mm-hmm.
And it really looks to the notion that Cheney does rule the roost.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the vice president position is supposed to be, you know, glad-handing people, essentially. And being ready in case something happens. The standby
yeah.
guy.
Yeah. Like John Nance Garner, the
fucking a warm spit.
Yeah, vice president under Franklin Roosevelt. Yeah,
and it wasn't.
But it wasn't spit. It wasn't the word he used. Yeah,
exactly.
But there's no doubt that that Dick Cheney is the most powerful vice president in American history.
Mm-hmm.
But it is telling that in the media, his shotgun accident got more attention than the power that he actually wields behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for those of us who pay close attention to the news, we do see evidence of his influence. The fact that it's his office that came up with the intelligence that led to our invasion of Iraq,
mm-hmm.
That it was his office that has drafted a document which essentially says the next big terror attack, we go into Iran, both guns blazing and tactical nukes too.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't have seen that coming from Al Gore's office during the Clinton presidency. You wouldn't have seen that coming from Dan Quayle's office during Bush 1's presidency.
No, not at all. Speaking of Iran, they had a missile test over the weekend, a sub surface missile test that went well.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you're not hearing a whole lot on the mainstream news about this, even though Iran, evil.
Mm-hmm.
Access of evil.
And the fact that Iran is in the middle of a five-week-long military exercise we talked about last week.
Yeah, this is part of that military exercise.
And so it is it's really interesting that you've got those exercises taking place in the Middle East and this sub-test in the Persian Gulf, which is, you know, as we keep hearing, the choke point for 20% of the world's oil, which passes through the Straits of Hormuz.
Yeah.
Why are gas prices down 20 cents a gallon?
Talk more about that sub.
It is curious that last week we had a story about Iran firing on and then commandeering a Romanian oil rig, and that got very little attention in the mainstream press, especially when we've got all of these threats and counter-threats going back and forth between the U.S. and Iran.
Mm-hmm.
Iran fires on an oil rig owned by a European company, and you'd think that this taking place in the Persian Gulf would have been enough to generate some kind of response from the West, first of all, and secondly, drive up the price of oil.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? Well, you know, the other thing about Iran is that they have just opened this heavy water plant,
mm-hmm.
which you have to have if you're going to produce a nuclear weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a whole lot of hue and cry about that either, from what I can tell.
Which is really odd, because I thought that was the whole thing that we were trying to stop.
You'd think so. That's what we were told.
Yeah.
I'm going to be really disappointed if I find it that the government is not telling me the truth.
And the whole truth. And nothing but the truth.
That's right.
Speaking of truth, whole truth, nothing but, there was a story that came out on Friday about a new technique, actually Thursday, a new technique for harvesting embryonic stem cells that did not damage the embryos and allowed the embryos to develop full term. Essentially, we were told this company called Advanced Cell Technology.
Pinocchio Enterprises.
Yes. Had figured out a way to remove one cell from the blastocyst when it had reached the eight-cell mm-hmm. stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then the seven-cell blastocyst could be implanted in the womb.
Yeah, not a problem.
And allowed to develop full term. This
just
would allow...
pinching a little off.
That's right.
Leave it alone.
Just a little bit of the dough and then putting the rest in the oven. Well, Wesley J. Smith, who's a bioethics watchdog, analyzed the paper a little more closely, the paper that they submitted to Nature magazine, and he said, you know what, even though the media jumped on this, New York Times and many other publications said this removes the ethical complaint, the ethical objections that pro-lifers have to embryonic stem cell research. Wesley J. Smith said, when you actually read the paper, you discover that this company actually killed all 16 of the embryos it experimented with.
Mm-hmm.
They actually did die.
In theory, if they didn't die, they could go on, because we're only taking the one.
Yeah.
It's not our fault it chose to die.
Yeah, the actual paper published in Nature states that all 16 embryos were destroyed and had 4 to 7 cells taken from each 8 to 10 cell embryo. Instead of one cell and leaving it alive, they took 4 to 7 and killed it. But other than that, they did exactly what they promised. So, what's really interesting, and I think this is telling, as soon as the news got out that they had made this so-called breakthrough, the stock price for advanced cell technology doubled.
Mm-hmm.
Doubled. Because everybody wanted to throw their money in on these guys. But then as soon as Smith and others came out and said, no, wait a minute, when you actually read the paper instead of reading the New York Times version of the paper, the stock price dropped from $3 a share down to about, well, it dropped back down about $1.43 a share. So it dropped back down to where it was. So, people realized that it wasn't quite what they promised it was going to be. So we'll keep an eye on that, because you know they're going to keep hammering away at that. Here in Missouri, it was really interesting. I interviewed a woman who represents a group called Missourians Against Human Cloning. There's a ballot initiative here in Missouri, a proposed amendment to the state constitution that we'll be voting on in November. It's being watched by people all over the country and all over the world, because what it would do in effect is enshrine human cloning in the constitution of the state of Missouri. That's not what they're telling you, though. When you read the actual five-page proposed amendment, it says right on page one there, one of the very first sentences is, human cloning shall not be allowed in the state of Missouri. But then when you flip over to page three, they define what they mean by human cloning.
Mm-hmm.
And for the purpose of this amendment, this proposed amendment, human cloning is only human cloning if you, you know, basically clone an embryo, clone, and then don't implant it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can create the blastocyst by somatic cell nuclear transfer,
mm-hmm.
in other words, cloning, and then destroy it to harvest the embryonic stem cells. And under the definition they provide, that's not cloning. Wait a minute.
Okay. Aid up.
And under this proposed amendment, the state general assembly, the state legislature, would not have the power then to defund that type of research inside the state of Missouri.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm glad that you're talking about this kind of stuff on your show. And your local show really is getting a lot of listeners, because you do talk about things like this.
Well, I hope so. I appreciate that. And I know that sometimes we, just kick back and try to, have a little fun. But
like Friday's show.
Yeah, Friday.
Friday. Now, for those of you, here's a little lighthearted left turn. For those of you who are not watching the Thursday night Sci-Fi Channel's presentation, the new show every Thursday night, of Who Wants to Be a Superhero.
Oh, our new favorite show.
You truly need to watch that. And on Friday, which is dedicated to sports because that's all anybody talks about around here on the weekends.
Yeah.
Friday, Derek gets together with a couple of guys for about 30, 40 minutes, and they just talk sports. And the big topic, of course, if you were going to have a superhero baseball team.
Who's on it and why?
Who's on it and why? So if you have an opinion on that, you can write to us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Yeah, it was just a way to kind of kick back and relive a little childhood memory here and there. Yeah. So that was kind of fun. But the rest of the week, we talked about the proposed stem cell amendment in the wake of this supposed new technique. And again, for Missouri, the bottom line is that what they want to do is make it impossible for us, short of amending the Constitution again, to ban human cloning.
Missouri is a test state for a lot of things politically. I'm not really sure why that is. Maybe the thinking is if you can get it to fly in Missouri, you can get it to go anywhere.
Sure.
But there are out-of-state concerns, organizations that hire people from all over the country to come here and pretend.
Mm-hmm.
They don't come right out and say, I live here in Missouri, but they lead you to believe they are by the conversation. And it's really getting to me.
And the names of their organizations, Missourians in Charge. Remember
yes,
that
exactly.
One?
Oh, yeah.
That was
yeah.
the group that wanted to enact a taxpayer bill of rights
exactly.
here in Missouri. And it was funded by a millionaire who lives in Soho in New York City.
Yeah.
I'm curious to find out who is funding this proposed stem cell amendment to the Missouri Constitution. Mm-hmm. There are TV commercials running here in Missouri featuring former Senator John Danforth, who's a very respected elder statesman here in the state of Missouri. He's actually a member of the clergy in the Episcopal Church.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got some credentials that he can, you know, fall back on to say,
I know, but the Episcopal Church is really...
Well, you and I know that.
But I know.
Yeah, for mass consumption, it at least carries a little bit of appearance of being a man who has considered all of the theological implications. So it's being presented to us as a way to make sure everybody has access to cures, when in fact what it does is enshrine cloning in our state constitution. So keep an eye on that here in Missouri, because this is going to be a big deal as we get close to November. In fact, it's going to be a big deal in the Senate race between Senator Jim Talent and the challenger, Claire McCaskill. Let's make a left turn into the world of the occult. What's going on Prince Charles Estates?
Those sheep. Yeah, those sheep.
Yeah. Word from the Daily Mail in London. Sheep have been mutilated and slaughtered in what appears to be occult rituals on land owned by Prince Charles in Devon.
This is not the first time he's had something like that happen. I think some of his property had other mutilations like this, but he's also had crop circles.
Yeah. The animals have had their eyes removed in some cases and their carcasses arranged into a satanic star.
Mm-hmm.
Local farmers have discovered a blood-stained altar and a wooden stake. And police are investigating. This is near the village of Princetown in Devon. It's on an estate that's huge, 69,000 acres.
Mm-hmm. It is big.
It is speculated.
69?
Yes. Yes. Speculated that the attacks are part of a ritual fantasy triggered by phases of the moon. More than 20 ewes and rams have been strangled, and some have had eyes, tongues, or sex organs cut out.
Mm-hmm. That's very much like the cattle mutilations over here.
Yeah. So it is really bizarre. I don't know, frankly, what connection or how much time Prince Charles spends there. And apparently police there don't have any, or at least aren't reporting any leads in the case to local groups that are claiming responsibility for this. But a farmer in the area who didn't want to be identified said, "We believe that these are linked to the Roman god Janus, the god of gateways. Dead sheep are often left in front of a gate, their heads twisted back as though looking through it." You know, uh-huh. Janus is the two-faced god,
exactly.
Looking forward, looking back.
That's January is named after Janus.
Exactly, yeah. So very, very unusual. And this is a... you know, part of the Duchy of Cornwall, which just as an aside, generated something like £14 million to help finance Prince Charles's public and private life.
Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is connected in any way, shape, or form, but for those of you who are not aware, early next month in September, the remake of the movie Wicker Man will be coming out, and I highly recommend seeing that.
And we talked about the original version starring Edward Woodward sometime back, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because we had talked about the actual ritual of the Wicker Man, where people are stuffed inside a hollow wicker effigy and then burned alive.
And this was something that I know when I took history classes back at IU, we were told that that was a lie, that never really happened, that the Romans were just trying to make the local populace look
Julius
really bad.
Julius Caesar just exaggerating.
Yeah, dead dogs and cats living. But Wicker Man takes a look at this, what may actually have taken place, sacrifices in England. And I'm really curious to see it because Nicolas Cage, and I like Nicolas Cage a lot, he is taking the same role that Edward Woodward took in the original version back in, what, late 70s, mid 70s, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really good movie, the old one. So I'm really anxious to see how they've maybe updated a little bit.
Yeah, it does look really creepy, and anything with Nicolas Cage is worth watching, just because he's really good. One final note here. This is something that I just caught at Watcher Magazine. Pentagon creating an African command?
Yeah, there is one there now of a sort. It's Cape Horn down there. It's a relatively small area of Africa. But apparently they have decided, like we have NORTHCOM and SOUTHCOM and European Command, there will now be an African Command. Which by definition makes it sound like the United States is in command of all of these areas.
Yeah, yeah. It's a new military organization to single-handedly deal with the entire continent of Africa. And according to the article, which is from the People's Daily, which is in China, it signifies a strategic shift in American policy, reflecting the need to put more emphasis on proactive preventive measures, or preventative measures, rather than maintaining a defensive posture designed for the Cold War. Well, in other words, it sounds to me like we're
It's just establishing, preemptive.
Yeah, we're establishing, it's just one more step in establishing our global empire.
Yes. Yeah, I really think that's what it is. That's why I put the story in there.
Yeah.
Africa is mineral rich.
Yes. And we're not just talking oil. There are a lot of minerals, gold, diamonds, other metals that are in abundance in Africa.
Well, I think the diamond trade is part... diamond and gold trade are why we're in South Africa. But there are so many, there's so much wealth in Africa.
Yeah, and having a military presence there, it wasn't that long ago, although, again, not widely reported, that Paul Wolfowitz, who was at the time still in the Defense Department, you know, before he was demoted to president of the World Bank, proposed setting up a UN standing army in Africa funded by the Pentagon. Now, what purpose would that serve? Whose purposes would it serve? Certainly not the Africans.
No.
I mean, we look at the kind of treatment they get at the hands of UN peacekeepers now in places like Darfur. Boy, you know, I'll tell you what, if you see those blue helmets coming, just get out of Dodge because they're not there to do you any good.
Hey, this is a total left turn, but you just reminded me of something. I don't know that we talked about this. When Tony Blair flew over here, we may have mentioned it, but just the day that he flew over here in his most recent visit to Washington, there was something happening at Heathrow Airport because it was all over Fox News. And you and I just sort of caught the tail end of it, and we didn't get the explanation of why they were there. And it may have been related to what's now come out about the various airplane, you know, terrorist, so-called terrorist incidents. What we saw without explanation on Fox were blue helmets in Heathrow.
That's a good point. I'd forgotten about that. And you're right. We had not talked about
that. You and
that.
I both stopped and I said, wait a minute. Why are those guys, why are the UN troops there?
Exactly. And I would not be surprised, and that's why I included this in the God conspiracy. I would not be surprised if we don't see a time here in the United States at some point where, because of some natural disaster like Katrina, mm-hmm. in which we did see the beginnings of it, in fact, mm-hmm. with the Mexican military coming
up. Or New Madrid.
Or New Madrid.
Which would affect the entire infrastructure of the United States.
Right. Or something happening at a port, say, in Los Angeles.
Or, hey, Florida. Jeb Bush has already declared.
Right. State of emergency. That we're told that because of the United States military's commitments overseas, we're so thinly stretched mm-hmm. in the Middle East that we need to bring in UN peacekeepers mm-hmm. in order to keep control on the streets of, you know, fill in the blank mm-hmm. of your nearby large city.
And there are those who say they're already here.
Yep. Well, we've managed to blather for a whole hour once again.
I know. We actually went into this saying, okay, we don't have to go an entire hour because our show has been picked up on Paul Pilgrim's show in the past, and we always like to give him an entire hour.
Yeah, just helps with his timing, and we kind of fill and pad with a little music at the end here, which is okay.
So we thought, if we go half an hour tonight, that's okay. But we managed to blather on for an hour. Can you imagine that we would ever do that?
Well, if you have any comments or feedback for us, questions or news stories that you'd like to tip us to, make sure you drop us a note at radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
And if anything happens in your neighborhood, as we mentioned earlier, if you have any infrastructure go down, especially if it seems fishy,
mm-hmm.
and of course, if you have a tinfoil hat, everything seems fishy. Just let us know, and you can send that note to radio@peeringintodarkness.com, or if you would rather send it to Derek alone, or just to me, of course, I'll tell him. It's Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com or Derek@peeringintodarkness.com. And, of course, we do have a forum online, but you got to play nice.
That's right. Yep. peeringintodarkness.com/forum. Until next week, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
And living in
PID Radio.